Nearly 2 years after the British petroleum oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, the company is finally beginning to pay multi-billion dollar settlements to the people whose lives and livelihoods were destroyed by the catastrophe. But what about the wildlife? The Gulf of Mexico is an important stopover for many Canadian birds on their north-south migration route. How have they been affected by the millions of liters of oil that spewed into the Gulf's waters? Seabird biologist and ocean sciences professor Bill Montevecchi of Newfoundland's Memorial University has been watching closely, and Mark Montgomery spoke with him last week about what he's been finding.
Professor Montevecchi, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Oh, good to talk to you, Mark.
Now, you study the northern gannet, one of the birds most affected by the Gulf disaster. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, I can. It's the largest bird that breeds in the North Atlantic. Spectacular, brilliantly white birds. They have a 2-meter wingspan. And in North America, they breed in just six places, three in the Gulf of St. Lawrence and three off the east coast of Newfoundland. Quite incredible animals. They dive from 50-100 feet above the water, catching large fish. Very spectacular seabirds.
Well, you've been out to their breeding colony studying them. What can you say about the situation 2 years on from the Gulf spill?
Well, I think, Mark, what I can say is we're not going to have a simple answer to that question. And on the basis of what we found from tracking studies and banding studies, it looks like most of the gannets that would have died from the Gulf of Mexico explosion, which was on the 20th of April 2010, would have been young birds. So consequently, that's a very hard thing to track in the population because the birds don't mature till they're around 5 years old. So, you know, any effects that might show up, we might simply not see them for a period of time. Canadian Wildlife Service are doing aerial photographs of the colony, so hopefully we'll be able to track it. We're banding birds. We're tracking more birds now. So I can't be definitive, but there's one thing I can be definitive about, and that's there were a lot of birds that died that shouldn't have.
Now, we are hearing that BP has started paying out compensation to people whose lives were affected by this. What about, are they paying anything for research on the effects of the spill on the environment?
Well, I think there's a lot of research going on, and I think in time, as the litigations play themselves out, there will be, I hope, a major fund that's relatively independent of BP that would fund some of this research. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is essentially in charge of the research, but BP has a massive control over what can get done, how it gets done, what gets reported, what doesn't get reported. So, I mean, I think we could be much more effective with it, but the way these things are set out, you know, they're not necessarily designed to be the most effective, So I actually have a problem with it, but I think we have to keep our nose to the grindstone, so to speak, and just keep pushing, I mean, there's a lot happening there, and there's an awful lot that we just don't know about.
Well, I'm wondering, because not only was there obviously millions of liters of crude oil that spilled all over the place, both on the surface and on the bottom of the ocean, but what about these dispersants? Any idea of the effect that they might have? Because
there
are massive quantities of them.
I think those are the big sorts of questions. You know, dispersants are essentially solvents that break down oil, surfactants, I think they're called. And never before had so much ever been released into the environment. It was released at the wellhead. And I know birds have shown up, not with oil on them, but birds that have completely lost their waterproofing, with sort of fluffed up plumage. And so, birds have natural oils on them. That's what keeps them waterproof. So There's a lot out there, that's been affecting fish. There's been oiled fish, fish that have suffocated because of, it looks like oxygen depletion. There's just a lot there. And, we go by it. I think what we really have to remember is that it was just a major, a major assault on the environment. And I think it's still there. And that's not just to say, biologists are always whining about it or they never want to end it. No, the fact of the matter is we want to really know what happened. And I don't think unless, there are biologists, whether they work for government or universities, really pushing for this, we'll never know. And we'll never know the dimensions of it, and we have to know these things. I mean, it's our environment. It's we've pretty much incorporated our environment, the oceans, to oil companies, and we really just have to take it back and take responsibility for it.
Well, Professor Montevecchi, are there any precedents of this sort of nature in the terms of the long-term effect of an oil spill and these dispersants and so on? Is there anything similar that happened?
One of the most depressing thing is every question I tend to get whenever this happens is, what is the population effect? And I think this is really important that we go for the body counts and look what's happened. These are birds that didn't have to die. We know that spill went on because of engineering errors and weak regulation. You know, I've just recently read stuff from the Exxon Valdez. A scientist I know made the most incredible case for the population decrease of harlequin ducks on the West Coast as a consequence of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Well, scientists who were then hired, you know, good scientists who were then hired by Exxon, complicated the case, repudiated it, and went on and on about how complicated it is, and you can't really make any conclusions. So, you know, this is really depressing. I mean, these scientists who made that case were hired by ExxonMobil, and I think we can obscure the obvious. I think we can use science to obscure the obvious. I think it's happened. So I think we shouldn't go there. You know, if you ask the same question as, well, what was the population, you know, in a human perspective, what was the population effect at Fukushima? Well, there wasn't one, but there was a body count, and there was error, and there was environmental damage. So, you know, it's not like we can just come and, you know, immediately say, yes, there's a population effect on northern gannets, brown pelicans, or whatever, but there's something that happened that shouldn't have.
But
I think that's where we stop, and that's where we just keep looking for what else was there, what can we document.
But I'm just wondering if we're not making a mistake by saying, okay, immediately after the disaster we saw this body count, and forget about 5 years or 6 years down the road as other news pushes this out of people's minds sort of thing, and we find out that 5 or 6 years down the road, there are some unexpected consequences.
Yeah, well, that's right, Mark. You know, and I think that's clearly part of the strategy. You know, I mean, we just make complicated things and difficult things overly simple and move on. And the reason we want to stay with it is, you know, the deep water horizon isn't the last one. We're deep water drilling in Canada now. So it's not like we're not going to see this again. And when we do, we should at least be better prepared. And if nothing else happens, we have to bear witness to these things. And you're right. Whenever there's a catastrophe, it always seems like a decade later it gets figured out, at which point it's not pressing anymore.
What do we lose if there is how does that affect people, really, if there is, say, we find there's a 20% loss of the gannet population or a 20% loss of the harlequin duck population or something? What does the environment lose? What do we lose?
Well, these are pretty fantastic animals. I don't know. I think we almost have to go back to Aboriginal perspectives that, you know, the animals that share the planet with us deserve to be here. And we certainly exploit them and hunt them and fish them and use them. But that doesn't give us, I don't think, any right to abuse them and to overlook the massive and crushing footprints that we have because of our excesses. And I think that's what we're missing. You know, it's that growth economy that is simply chewing up the earth. For some of us who can live fairly high on the pinnacle of excess, I guess is what you might call it, and we have better alternatives.
Well, Professor Montevecchi, thanks for joining us today on the show.
Well, I really appreciate it, Mark, and thanks so much to you as well.
That was Mark Montgomery's conversation with Professor Bill Montevecchi of Newfoundland's Memorial University, and we'll have a link to his website on our webpage at rcinet.ca/ the link. Bill Montevecchi joined us on the line from Portugal Cove, just outside the provincial capital, St. John's. And within hours of that conversation, we got word that the Canadian Wildlife Service had just completed an aerial survey of the Northern Gannet's colony on Bonaventure Island, that's in eastern Quebec. Preliminary results showed a 20% decline in the island's breeding population between 2009 and 2011.